You're listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's 9:37 on this Wednesday morning. Ouch. And with that whip, you know it's time for, yes, S&M show.
Good morning.
With Salvatore Dali there. And we have Julian Ng and also Chen Xiaoming joining us this morning. Ouch.
Morning.
What are we talking about today, huh?
What it depends on what
Dali has
complaints Dali has. Is it Zidalang?
Zidalang. I don't have any complaint. I'm just like shocked that nobody in the papers or anywhere has made a beep about this.
Okay, but
let's give a background on what's happening with Zidalang first.
Okay, right. They are a China-based footwear maker.
Right.
They are going for a rights issue, issuing about 322.7 million shares at 35 cents apiece.
Okay.
And the counter was traded at what?
28 cents yesterday.
28 cents yesterday. So, what do you think, Dali? And also, there are free warrants. And
the, in total, how much are they raising?
Bonus shares.
They're raising, what, 200 over million. Is that right?
Well, there are 300 million rights shares and a bonus of about 242 million.
300 over at about, what, 35 cents, right?
35
so, about 100
cents,
million?
Yeah. About 100 million plus.
So, they're raising 100 million.
Ringgit, yeah.
Show me they have 291 million cash and equivalents on their on the books.
You know what? It reminds me of the Westport IPO, you know.
Okay.
Okay.
It's 75% dividend payout and they are raising what, 2 billion ringgit?
From the IPO.
From the IPO.
That's so that they can sustain their 75% dividend
payout. But how much free float is there? Honestly.
Okay, I don't know what the eventual free float is going to be, but the cornerstone, two cornerstone investors, one from UK, one from the US, takes up almost half.
Well, we can talk about Westport later. I think Westport is a different kettle of fish.
Okay.
And it's very...
Let's go back to Zidalang.
Zidalang first. Yeah. Well, they have 200... When you have 291 million so-called cash
in
the books, and then you want to raise about 100 million, isn't it?
Right.
100 million. I don't know.
What use?
Doesn't this raise any alarms?
It doesn't make any sense at all.
It depends what you're going to do with the cash, doesn't it?
No, but
no, if you're planning to make a very, very big acquisition, say, for example.
Okay.
For example.
Half a billion.
I hope they explain it to shareholders what they want to do, because there should be a rights circular.
You
right?
would think that it would be in a circular before any shareholder in your right mind will subscribe to the rights issue, which has got these warrants and stuff attached to it.
And the thing is that if you're already holding XDL shares, say at an average cost of, say, 25 cents, all right?
Puts you in a very awkward position.
Your NAV in the books is 129. And and you get hit with this rights, you have to subscribe to the rights. Because the share, technically speaking, if all the figures are correct, the NAV is 129. I'm holding shares at 25 cents. And I buy because I am a Warren Buffett, Ben Graham, long-term shareholder, buy because, it will get back to NAV. Yeah. So I have to subscribe.
In for a penny, in for a pound.
Well, the share did rise to a 17-month high. I'm sure if you didn't like the rights, you have the opportunity to sell.
Sell, precisely.
But it has rose to a 17-month high. This is like harder to explain the UFO.
but this is my point about share prices, right? I just don't understand some share price movements sometimes, and there's just really no basis for it. Somebody is doing something that's causing this, and
so
us laymen have no idea.
So the shareholders have voted with their money.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, okay, then the thing is that we were discussing is that this is kind of like an alarm or something.
A signal.
A signal, okay. Mm-hmm. We're not saying that it's something sinister happening, but it triggers,
I think
should raise a kind of Uma in a different sense,
Okay.
But is there a responsibility or does the SE or Bursa have any leeway to say anything at all?
Mm. I don't think so.
There's absolutely no way they can say anything.
There's nothing wrong
with
what they're doing.
Well, it depends on how activist you want these regulators to be. And I don't think it's a job.
I'm not saying that they regulators come in and say that there's something wrong. But I'm just saying that.
What I'm saying is this is bordering into the territory of activism. And the activism usually happens before listing, right? Whether you approve the listing or not. Mm. After it's listed, it's kind of dodgy if the regulator is being interventionist about the
whole thing. Fair enough. This is also for our listeners to also be aware that it is not the purview of SC or Bursa to warn you people when, you know, this...
Yeah, about risk.
Risk, you know, risk-taking.
Yeah, investments are about buyer beware. You need to walk into your investments with your eyes wide open and keep them wide open during the duration of your investment.
Unless there's some rigging going on.
Yeah, and if there is some rigging, then yes, you have SC and Bursa get involved. But in the case, unless there is some fraud somewhere, there's no reason for the regulators to get involved in how the company is run.
Fair enough, because in this case, obviously, that the investment banker who takes it on probably, you know, told the company, look, you need to guarantee the you know, underwrite the whole thing. If you can't place it out or nobody subscribe, you know, nobody would take this out.
But in the past, Dali, to be fair to you, the SC has actually taken an activist role because they have rejected certain acquisitions, they have rejected restructuring M&A. But I think they also did mention that they want to go into more of a disclosure-based environment. So I think maybe the philosophy is still evolving as far as SC is concerned.
And it's very, very tough for investors because for over 1,000 companies, there's only like really like good research only on 30.
Yeah.
And those some houses try to cover the good second liner, so you get another maybe 30, 40. So it's still less than 10%. And then when we have like so many other companies trying to raise money from the market, trying to do these acquisitions that might not be so, you know, at arm's length, there's nobody out there to actually like warn.
So there's the need the general in the market. There's a need in the market there. There is a big need in the market. The information,
you know,
so
the big need in the market for somebody else. Because if something, if the nugget tries to do something fishy, so to speak, inverted commas, you'll find that the reports will highlight it.
Maybe they should go to Malaysia Finance Blogspot to get the information.
I don't know. I mean,
but you clearly highlight that there is a need for that kind of information, the speed of it, the detail of it, to be available in this market, and it's not here. If you look at more developed markets, there are loads of papers and
another reason why
everything.
Indirect reason is to like tell Bursa and SC that, you know, be kinder to the financial and stock bloggers, because
information should necessarily be provided through a blog.
No. What I'm saying that these are avenues whereby the other 900 stocks get discussed correctly or incorrectly, but there are channels for this to be discussed properly.
Right.
You know.
Is that being hindered right now? The kind of discussion, because Cedar Lung, for all intents and purposes, is an extremely small company. Right?
And talking about bloggers, I tell you what, it's quite interesting. Huh? We'll talk about this after the ad break on the S&M Show.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning and welcome back to the Ouch S&M Show. Yes. Oh, together with Salvatore Dali. And Julian Ng and Chan Xiaoming, you were talking about financial bloggers, which
those who blog about stocks and markets, you know, anywhere,
right?
It's a thankless task, you know. We don't get.
Surely
any
you didn't go into it to get thanks.
Yeah, you actually go in for some S&M.
You went in for the love.
Everybody gets treated, because, you know, the only people who will want to write back to you are people who have something, you know, nasty to say to you. Those people who think that you are okay would never write to you.
What are you referring to?
I mean, the readers, the feedback. Like,
that's just normal. I mean, you know, that happens in blogs, you know, employee feedback, or whatever it might be.
It's still
there are
trolls around. Thankless stuff, yeah.
But the thing is, you can't please everyone all the time anyway.
Not aiming to.
But do you feel restricted in what you can say on the blog?
Yeah.
Well, of course, there's a lot of like self-censorship. You have to bear in mind that you have to put your disclaimers out in the first place, and then you have to think about, is this, you know, would the SC or the Bursa come after me if I say the wrong things?
Why would they come after you?
If they think that it is something sinister, that I'm part of a grander syndicate plan, you know,
but
move
if it's
stocks.
Just your personal view, there's nothing wrong in you saying whatever you want to say.
That's your defense, I guess, you know.
Okay.
But, I don't know. But it's a thankless task. There are a few criticisms people that have of financial bloggers. One is that, you only write about a stock after he has moved up. I think that is slightly unfair. It depends on whether a stock picker or stock writer picks a stock based on, say, a very long term view. That's one thing.
I was about to jump in with
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Or somebody like me who's a trend investor, basically. Say I pick M-Mode at 53 cents, and there are so many people who say, oh yeah, thank you very much, you know, you're picking a stock at a 5-year high. But it is only when they hit a certain level with a certain kind of volume that it gives me that kind of confidence that this stock is going to go. You know, I might be right or wrong, you know, that's my view.
Mm-hmm.
Cannot.
Do they expect you to be some kind of sage to tell them what's going to
every time I say I pick a stock, and then you say, "Oh well, you should have picked this 6 months ago." It's ridiculous, you know. I don't have that long a time horizon, you know.
That's because you are a short term player, aren't you?
Yeah.
Unlike others in this studio,
we shall not name names.
And then the other normal criticism is that shouldn't say that.
Right? No, it's okay.
That fella, he would have bought before he wrote about the stock. Now, think about it for a while.
Mm.
Do you want me to not buy
and
write about
buy?
The stock? Or buy and then write about the stock?
How about don't buy and just write about a stock?
This is stupid, isn't it? Doesn't mean I'm writing like a poet, you know.
No, there are ethical standards, right?
Yes. Okay. What would you? My ethical standard is that it is in my disclaimer that I may already have position in the stock.
Yeah.
Now, if you are a stock blogger, what would you do?
Who is that Hong Kong minority activist? Is it David Webb?
Yep.
Yeah. He runs what is called the Web. Site, right?
Yeah.
And he has extremely high ethical standards where he never buys any of these stocks that he talks about.
Okay.
But every year he comes up with a list and that list really outperforms. I think he has stopped, he has discontinued that, and he has focused his efforts on just the issue of protecting minorities.
But that is not
that my, is my, his own choice.
My aim is not to be a deity, you know.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So, what is the aim of you blogging anyway?
It used to be it's my passion. I just want to talk about things that really excites me, and nothing excites me
Which
more than
fine.
Stocks and
There's
markets.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
And other stuff.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, people write about all sorts of things, cars and women and you know, and why not about stocks? But then writing and sending out information this way through the internet might be viewed from a different viewpoint. Yeah. Look at Carl Icahn and look what he's been doing for the past, you know. Here is a guy who's literally been in charge of insider trading back in the 80s, never found to be guilty. But now he comes back, he goes into tech companies, he throws a spanner in the works for Dell, and Yahoo and all that. And now he goes on to tweet about Apple. He said, oh, I
it
had
happens.
Dinner with
this is,
yeah.
this
I had
this
dinner
is
with
norm.
Him.
Yeah, this
I
is
had
a
dinner
lot,
with him.
A lot
I tell him to he has to buy back his
you look
shares.
At CNBC, look at anybody, whether you're a fund manager, broker,
they
whatever.
They talk about their stocks.
Yeah. They talk about the stocks they already have.
Yeah.
Mark
Even
Faber.
Buffett.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
you know?
Yeah.
So,
but I think who's generally speaking, not all the time, but generally speaking, the crowd is smart enough to distinguish what to buy.
You hope so,
buy.
Right?
There would be a small group of people who would be tricked, all right? Mm. But to say that they totally rely on your blog for their investment decisions.
Mm.
I mean, that's their fault if they
if
they want to do that, right?
Yeah, that's also why I stopped writing not too many stocks nowadays, you know. It's just such a thankless task, you know.
Once in a while, you get a thing like Geneva, like tricking everybody, right? Once in a blue moon. But generally speaking, they don't have that kind of
There are
reliance.
A few. I mean, mine is just one of a few. There are other much better blogs out there that people should really, you know, follow, like Mula.
Mm. Where's the Mula?
Where's Mula is very good, but he's like the Muddy Waters of Malaysia, I guess.
And
then there's another blogger called David Kwe.
Mm.
He's pretty good too. And there's a reminder blog called Alex Liu, Next Trade.
Yeah, Next Trade.
Pretty good. I mean, these are bloggers who are, they don't need to do this, you know, but when they do something that is out of their passion, you know, and they're sharing, you know, you know, cut them some slack.
I look at it this way. I look at it as another channel or another you know, another way of getting more information.
Exactly, and the market lacks information.
Correct. All
right.
That sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, I'm not about to read through tons and tons of analyst reports and which cover more or less the same stocks anyway. You know what I mean? Yeah. Or they cover a sector and you know, I'm not interested in that sector. So where do I go to look for information for small companies and, you know, stuff like that? Yeah.
You know what?
But you have gone, as you said, very general for the past couple of months or so. Your last posted today actually talks about asset class returns as of 30th September. How more general can you get?
I know. I have to stay like more macro, you know, instead of going down to zero down on stocks, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
So are you planning to go that path now from now on or what?
Stock recommendation will be a lot less frequent for sure.
Okay.
See, I recommended, not recommended, I highlighted M mode also kena.
Which one?
M mode.
Oh, right.
You know, talk about hibiscus also kena.
Okay.
You know, but anyway.
Ah, well, I tell you what you won't kena is the song for today. You've got to.
Yeah, for people who love refuge. Horses.
You love horses, huh?
Ride on them, bet them, whatever. Wildfire.
Probably more the latter than the former.
That's the title of the song, Wildfire. It's by a guy called Michael Martin Murphy. You might know him, you might not know him. Some of his more other hit songs. He had a couple of hit songs. What's Forever For is another one for him.
Is this the same one by Dan and Coley?
Yeah, England, Dan, George Coley and all that. Here's Wildfire right now. Michael Martin Murphy. On the SNM show. Every Wednesday, don't forget to join us once again with Salvatore Dali and all. If you want to see his blog, it's malaysiafinance.blogspot.com.
Oh, they say she died one winter when there came a killing. The pony she named Wildfire busted down his stall. In a blizzard, she was lost. She ran calling Wildfire, calling
BFM 89.9, the business station.